This is Dana Monsees, the nutritionist and Whole30 certified coach behind Real Food with Dana, and you're listening to the Real Talk with Dana podcast. Okay, guys, welcome. We're on episode 12 now, I think, of the Real Talk with Dana podcast, all about nutrition and wellness and fitness and all of the awesome things. So today we are going to talk about food allergies, intolerances, and sensitivities, which is actually really timely because let me tell you what happened to me this weekend. So I was coaching a swim meet, which, you know, shocker, it's not like I do that all the time or anything. But so this one, we were on deck from 5:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday. And usually at the end of really long swim meets, you kind of get itchy eyes and just like general grossness in your sinuses from being in the pool all weekend. But this time was for some reason different. I don't know what the heck kind of chemicals they were using in the pool or what was going on, but I had some kind of allergic reaction to some kind of chemical compound in the pool where I was all weekend. So that was super fun because when I went to my parents' house to pick up my dog afterwards, they were like, Dana, are you having an anaphylactic reaction or something? And like my eyes basically felt like they were bleeding. They were itching, like everything was scratchy. My whole face was itching. It was swollen. It was gross. And the only thing that fixed it was taking some Benadryl and taking the whole day off on Monday. So that was fun and very timely, just in time for this episode. So that is what's called a mild allergy. And we are going to be talking about allergies, intolerances, and sensitivities. So what are they? Where do they come from? What is the difference between them? How can you get tested for them? And how can you heal? / can you ever eat your favorite cheese again if you are intolerant to it? And if this podcast really resonates with you, if you feel like you've got some serious food intolerances going on or leaky gut, maybe you've tried testing already, or if you just don't know what to do, I am actually taking a few new clients in the next couple of weeks. So if you want to work with a nutritionist one-on-one to figure out what's really going on and how you can heal from all of it and start eating your favorite foods again, I am available. So feel free to email me at realfoodwithdana@gmail.com, or you can book an appointment through my Work With Me page on realfoodwithdana.com. But again, I only have a couple of spots opening up in February and March, so email me as soon as you can if you're interested. I will also have a wait list, so don't worry, at some point I will definitely be able to work with you. So now let's get to the good stuff. So I personally have put myself through many different food sensitivity tests, intolerance tests, all of the things in the past through years through blood work and DNA testing and all of this good stuff. Do you know how much I hate needles? Like when I was a little kid, whether it was needles or it was the strep test, my mom said they used to get like three nurses to hold me down, and they don't have to do that anymore, but I still like shiver just thinking about it. I literally almost passed out the last time I got blood drawn. I'm not usually such a sissy, but this time I saw the blood going out and I was just like, whoa, the room started spinning. So that was a first. So anyways, why are we talking about food sensitivities and intolerances and allergies today? If you are struggling with chronic health problems, inexplicable belly bloat or GI symptoms or inflammation, no matter where in your body, and you've been taking care of yourself with healthy food for a while, meaning, sorry Twinkies, you are out, I'd say there's a pretty good chance that you have some kind of food or environmental sensitivity going on, like pollen, grass, or mold. And you might not necessarily know about them, know which things you're sensitive to, or how you can nail those down, or how you can heal from them. So first, let's talk about where do these food intolerances even come from? So they can be caused by the histamine in foods or wine, deficiencies in certain enzymes that you need to break down the food, so think of like lactose intolerance, celiac disease, food additives, introducing solid foods too early for babies in their lives, leaky gut, which we talked about that last week, autoimmune disease, pesticides and GMOs that are being added to food, recurring chronic stress, or psychological factors. Remember the gut-brain connection we talked about in the leaky gut episode last week, and the list goes on. So we're going to talk about today the difference between food allergies versus intolerance versus sensitivities. So all of these are called hypersensitivity reactions, which occur when allergens, which are also called extrinsic, so outside of your body, antigens. These are recognized by your immune cells or antibodies, which are the little guys that help fight off infection or other shit we don't want in our bodies, like toxins or bad bacteria. When these antibodies recognize something coming in, whether it's a food, environmental compound like pollen, or a toxin, as something that has either been harmful to the body before or has gotten into your bloodstream due to intestinal permeability, again, make sure you check out episode 11 if you missed that one, your body mounts an immune response. So the different types of hypersensitivity reactions, whether something is determined to be an allergy, intolerance, or sensitivity, are divided into different classes depending on the time of the onset of symptoms or how long it takes your body to react, the type of symptoms, and the type of immunoglobulin or protein-type cells that function as antibodies or immune cells that are involved. So we're going to go through allergies, intolerances, and sensitivities so you understand the difference between them, what the symptoms are, and how you can test for them. So first up is allergies. Allergies are a type 1 hypersensitivity reaction, and the immunoglobulin or antibody cells that are involved are called IgE. This is important because later we're going to talk about intolerances, and those are primarily IgG reactions. So true allergies provoke anaphylactic symptoms. Think of the type you need an EpiPen for that can be life-threatening, and this usually happens within minutes, like within 5 minutes or 20 to 30 minutes of exposure to a food or some kind of environmental allergy that you have. Now, with type 1 or with true allergies, you can have a mild allergy. For example, your throat gets itchy, your tongue swells up a little bit. A lot of people experience this with like the skin from apples or peaches. I even have a friend who has this with avocados, but he keeps eating them anyways. Obviously not the best plan of action, but you do you, you're an adult, and as long as your throat isn't closing up, you can make your own decisions. Or this is the more common form that we've probably all heard of. You can actually have a severe allergy. Think of the type of allergy that people have where they need to keep an EpiPen on them everywhere they go, because even if they're in the same room as peanuts or almonds or whatever it is, their throat might start to close up. So symptoms can include hives, swelling of the face and tongue, itchy tongue and throat, or even your throat starting to close up to the point where you can't breathe, and people either need an EpiPen or they need to go to the hospital immediately to save their lives. So testing for true IgE allergies is performed using the skin scratch testing at an allergist or a blood IgE test to provoke the symptoms of that allergy in that person to see if it is a true allergy. The skin test is done by applying a small bit of the food in question, or like an extract of that food protein, to the skin to provoke an immune reaction to see if you're actually having an immune response. You can also confirm them by an elimination diet and a controlled food challenge, as in a controlled environment monitored by a doctor. Do not do this at home because that could be a really bad thing to do. So, food allergies are immunologic-based abnormal responses to food, whereas food intolerances are abnormal reactions to the food that are not immune-mediated at the start. So, side note on celiac disease, because you might have a question about this one, because it kind of treads the line between allergy and intolerance. So, celiac does have some features of a true food allergy because it involves the immune system. So when people that have celiac eat some form of gluten, which is wheat, barley, or rye, the body sees it as a foreign invader and goes to work to attack those compounds, which then results in inflammation and a host of negative symptoms all over the body, including the destruction of those little villi in your intestinal tract. Remember, the ones that have all your digestive enzymes and prevent stuff from getting through your gut wall. But people at celiac are not at risk of anaphylaxis from gluten, which makes it different from food allergies. However, these people can never eat gluten again because their bodies have a genetic disposition against the proteins in gluten-containing grains, meaning every time they eat them, they're going to have an immunologic response. So if someone has celiac, don't be a dick and say, oh, you know, just won't a little bit of bread, like, won't that be okay? Or can't you just have a bite of this cupcake? No, you are literally giving that person inflammation to a horrible degree every single time they're eating that food. So just please stay away. From a celiac myself, it is so annoying when people do that. So please just stop. Okay, so on to food intolerances and sensitivities now, because I know that's probably what you're all here for. So these are types 2 and 3 hypersensitivities. These are the food intolerances that can take between 5 and 8 hours for type 2 and between 2 to 8 hours for type 3 to appear. And these both involve IgG or IgM immunoglobulins, remember the immune cells. So we mostly deal with type 3 reactions since these involve responses from immune complexes in the body and autoimmune disease. Type 2, which we don't really hear about that often, usually involves a blood transfusion that you have a reaction to or hemolytic newborn diseases. So remember, autoimmune disease is an adaptive immune response against the body's own cells. This is type 3. Now, type 4 is also really common, and it's called a delayed hypersensitivity reaction, which involves the body's T cells, and the reaction can take between 24 or 72 hours to appear. So this is why, when we do elimination reintroduction protocols like the Whole30, you have to go back to your base Whole30 guidelines in between the reintroductions, because it may actually take 2 to 3 days for a reaction to a food to even show up. Just as an FYI, a lot of people will use food intolerances and food sensitivities interchangeably when they're talking about these things. Now, some people will actually say that an intolerance means that you lack the digestive enzymes to break down that food, like lactose intolerance, where people actually lack the enzyme lactase, which you need to break down foods containing lactose in dairy products, while sensitivities may provoke the same kinds of symptoms as intolerances. You're not actually missing the enzymes you need to chemically break down that food. So an example of a food sensitivity is non-celiac gluten sensitivity. This happens in people who have some kind of reaction to gluten, whether it be digestive stuff, brain fog, headaches, skin breakouts or rashes, joint pain, but they don't have the accompanying destruction of the villi in their intestines or the autoimmune response like celiac disease, though non-celiac gluten sensitivity can lead to intestinal permeability. And both intolerances and sensitivities can be caused by leaky gut. And since, as far as I know, there isn't really a way to distinguish between intolerances and sensitivities on a blood test or anything, and they can provoke the same kinds of symptoms, we're just going to talk about both of them together for our purposes today. So let's talk about the symptoms of food intolerances, because these are just lovely, aren't they? So these are generally much milder than food allergies. Well, for one, they aren't life-threatening, so that's a good thing. Usually, with a food intolerance, people will experience digestive symptoms like gas, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, heartburn, or reflux-type symptoms, brain fog or headaches like joint pain, skin breakouts, and acne, not hives, because that can be a symptom of more of an actual allergy, or sometimes a rash. So food intolerances may be milder than allergies, but they can actually have a cumulative effect on the body, which can provoke the immune system, increase the inflammation in your body, and make your leaky gut worse, meaning more things are getting from your gut through to the bloodstream that shouldn't be there in the first place. So how do you figure out if you have a specific food intolerance? Let's talk about the different types of tests that exist out there, their validity, and which ones I think might actually be worth it for you. So first, what you should do is rule out any true food allergies, because if you find you have a serious reaction every time you eat gluten, like it's body-wide and you're totally crippled for days afterwards, you might want to get tested for a celiac. Or if you eat peanuts and you have like an anaphylactic reaction, you don't want to do food sensitivity testing because that could be a true allergy and you need to get that checked out by a doctor. So after those are ruled out, you have a couple of different testing options for food intolerances or sensitivities. Now, there are IgG food sensitivities or intolerances tests. These can be blood tests or stool tests that you order from a doctor. A couple of the common ones are the ELISA test, the ALA test, the ALCAT, or an IgG stool test. So the stool test will assess the amount of IgG immunoglobulins that you have in your gut. If there's a very high presence of these detected, you probably have some leaky gut and malabsorption going on, and probably a good list of food sensitivities to go with that, though the stool test won't tell you exactly what those foods are. Now, the blood tests, the ones that actually test your blood against the antigens in certain foods to see if you react to them, these measure your cell's immune and inflammatory responses to certain foods. So the idea is that if a food provokes a reaction, you should avoid that food for a while you do some gut healing, and then you might be able to eat it again. So these tests can actually run you between $400 to, I've seen about even $800. So talk about using your whole paycheck, and you have to order them through your doctor. There's a lot of debate in the scientific literature as to whether these are actually fully accurate, so you need to take that into consideration when you're considering spending all this money on these tests. So usually a lot of foods will come up that you eat all the time, though this doesn't necessarily mean that you are sensitive to them. And usually I only recommend these tests as a last resort, like for people who have tried everything else and still can't figure out what's going on. For me, for example, I knew I had leaky gut and adrenal problems. I knew I had celiac, that I was lactose intolerant. I had tried every elimination diet that I could think of, from multiple rounds of the Whole30 and reintroduction to the GAPS diet, which is the gut and psychology syndrome diet, the paleo autoimmune protocol, which is no eggs, no nuts, no nightshades or spices, low FODMAP, and a combination of all of those at the same time, which was probably the most restrictive diet I've ever been on in my life, and it was not fun. It was miserable. I felt like I couldn't eat anything at all. I could never go out to eat. And even when I was doing that healing protocol, I was still feeling like shit. My symptoms weren't going away. So at that point, I knew I had to get some kind of testing done to see what was still going on. Because even though my diet seemed as anti-inflammatory and like squeaky clean as I could get it, I was still having issues. So maybe at that point, I might have still been eating some foods that are normally safe and anti-inflammatory for most people that weren't working well for me. So I decided to get this, the blood food sensitivity testing done through my doctor. And I have to admit, I was really freaked out by the results because, no joke, 55 foods came up on my test. So like, if you think yours is bad, been there, done that, I totally understand where you're at. So here is the thing, though, to understand with these food sensitivity or intolerance tests. They're not always totally accurate. So if you get a blood sensitivity test done, like the ALCAT or the ALA test, it will show you what antibodies to foods are showing up in your blood at that point in time, aka what foods you're sensitive to that your body is having some kind of reaction to and causing inflammation. But the thing to keep in mind is that your red blood cells recycle every 80 to 120 days. So if a food shows up on your blood test 1 month, in 3 months it might not show up there anymore, or it might show up with totally different foods. So it can change month to month and every couple of months. But a couple of key takeaways from these tests that we do know for sure is that if a food comes up that you almost never eat, that means you're probably very sensitive to that food and should avoid it for a while as you do some gut healing. For me, when I first took these tests, lactose, wheat, and lots of kinds of grains came up, and totally randomly, black-eyed peas, anchovies, and Brazil nuts, which was totally random for me because I don't think I'd ever eaten black-eyed peas or anchovies in my life, and very, very randomly and sporadically would eat Brazil nuts. And those were the things that came up the highest, even higher than wheat and lactose. Granted, I hadn't been eating those for a while, but just the fact that those three things came up and I never ate them did mean that I have a true sensitivity to them. So now I just never eat them. So another thing that these tests are good for, whether the exact foods that are coming up are reliable or accurate or not, is they can show the degree of leaky gut or intestinal permeability that you have going on. So if, like me, you have 55 foods show up, even mundane things like cilantro, cinnamon, berries, chicken, which all came up on mine, it might just mean that you have a lot of leakiness or permeability going on. And this is also a good measure of how leaky your gut is. So if, like me, then 50 foods come up, your gut is probably wrecked and you need to do some serious gut healing. If 20 foods come up, it's probably not as wrecked. So it might be a little bit wrecked, but not totally wrecked. So this is also a tool that we can use while we're doing gut healing to see if you're healing up well and to what degree. So for example, if you have 50 foods come up the first time, and then 6 months later we retest and only 15 foods come up, that means you're probably healing along there, which is great. So if a bunch of foods do come up, again, you need to do some serious gut healing protocols, after which those food sensitivities might actually go away. Yay! And then you can follow up in a couple of months and see the number of foods that you were sensitive if that has gone down, which means you're getting less permeable in your gut. And the test can also confirm that, again, if you don't ever eat a food and it shows up, you're definitely sensitive to that. Big disclaimer here, and big thing to remember. These are food intolerance tests. They are measuring IgG, which is not true allergies to foods, which is, again, IgE. So these food intolerance tests, if a food comes up on here, it does not mean you are allergic to these foods and you have to avoid them forever. I know I said that on the last podcast about leaky gut, but I'm gonna say it again. If a food comes up on a food intolerance test, it means you are sensitive to it. You are not allergic to it. So you can feel better about that. Now, there are a few tests that I have experienced with that you don't have to order through your doctor, so I'm gonna talk about those. One of them is a much lower grade version of the blood tests, where all you do is prick one finger and you give them like one or two drops of blood and send it off for analysis. This one is called Pinner test. You've probably heard it before, and it can be even more expensive than some of the blood tests that you have to order through your doctor. So I've personally found that Pinner test is extremely inaccurate, and I've had a lot of people come to me and say that theirs was really inaccurate too. So it isn't just me. So I think this was like a year, maybe a year and a half ago, Pinner test actually approached me as a potential affiliate for them, just being totally transparent here, to sell their tests, which you can actually make a lot of money on by selling these tests to people. But I wanted to try it out before I recommended it to anyone, and that's what I do with every product that's ever sent to me. I always try it out before I recommend it to you guys. So I did one of the fancy schmancy blood tests through my doctor, and another one that I'm going to talk about called Balanced Health, which does hair and saliva analysis, and the Pinner test at the same time, so I could tell between the three of them if there were similarities, if they were totally different, if one of them was accurate, if the other ones weren't accurate. So the doctor's blood test and the Balanced Health one were pretty close in both the number of foods that came up and the types of foods that came up. I think there were about like 15 or maybe 20 foods that came up. And on the Pinner test one, one food came up, just one. I think it was like pork or something. Now, keep in mind, at this point, I pretty much already knew all of the foods that I was intolerant to, aside from gluten and dairy, because I had done a lot of different blood tests and a lot of different elimination reintroduction protocols at this point, which most people view as the gold standard of food intolerance tests. So there were a ton of foods that I knew that I was intolerant to because I reacted really negatively to them, and these didn't show up on Pinner tests, but they had shown up on the other ones. And so, while some people might be like, oh, you know you have to eat those foods to provoke a reaction before you take the test. Yes, I know that. This is something I went to school for, so I'm very aware. And I ate a bunch of the foods that I didn't normally eat just to provoke a reaction on the test. And let me tell you, I felt like balls afterwards, and they still didn't show up on the test. So that made me even more pissed off, because basically I ate those foods to get a negative reaction for it not to be confirmed on the test, which for me means that it's totally inaccurate. And further, that test, the Pinner test one, claims that it shows both permanent and short-term food intolerances, but when you get the results, it doesn't differentiate between them. And also, how the heck are you supposed to know what is permanent and what is temporary if you're getting those results and it doesn't differentiate between them? And here's my question, how are they supposed to differentiate that when they're doing the test anyways? So I'm calling BS on that one. Don't waste your money on it, just being fully upfront here. So on a more positive note, there is one other test that I have done that I've been using personally for a long time and I use with my clients pretty often, and it's called a balanced health full scan. So they use what's called bioenergetic or bioresonance hair and saliva analysis to assess nutritional imbalances, food and environmental sensitivities, hormonal imbalances, toxin load, and they also give you a customized scan for like balancing remedies and supplements that you can use to heal if you want to, but those are like by no means necessary to buy afterwards. So basically you're getting the whole shebang of what's really going on with your body from the food intolerance side, but you also get hormonal imbalances and vitamin deficiencies. And just like I did when I did the food intolerance test with the blood test through my doctor, with the Pinner test and the balanced health one, I did the same thing with blood tests for hormones and for vitamin deficiencies aside from this with my doctor at the same time to see if they matched up, and they actually did. The results came back really similar, so I do trust this one. And the good part about this is because I really like the people at Balanced Health and I've been working with them, they're going to give you guys a $20 discount on any full scan that you want if you use the code REALFOODWITHDINA, no space, at checkout. Now, in my opinion, which is shared by most doctors and nutritionists and really anyone who knows anything about food intolerances, is that the gold standard for testing is an elimination reintroduction diet. Because no one and no lab test knows your body and how it reacts to foods better than you, even a food intolerance test. For example, I did know that there were a lot of foods that I reacted to based on past eliminations diets I had done that didn't show up on some of these tests. So the best way to do this elimination diet is to eliminate foods that you think you might be intolerant or sensitive to for at least 30 days. I've seen some people that only do them for 2 weeks. That is not enough to totally get the food out of your system. Then you follow a reintroduction protocol to introduce these foods one at a time. So you keep a food and symptom journal the whole time during the elimination period and the reintroduction period so that you can notice any differences in your digestion, your mood, your energy, your skin, headaches, brain fog, any of these symptoms that you might be experiencing. That, in my opinion, is the best way to figure out what foods, what sensitivities are actually causing your symptoms, better than any test that you can take. So, about the tests, they can be useful and they do have a time and place. I like to use them as kind of a last resort. So if you've already done an elimination or healing diet, if you've tried a lot of other things and you still can't figure out what's going on, then you might want to consider one of those blood tests through your doctor or through the balanced health scan. Like if you think you're eating all the right foods for your body, or you're currently doing an elimination diet and you're still having symptoms. So these tests I wouldn't recommend for someone who's just doing standard American diet, who's super stressed out, who isn't sleeping, and they're still eating a ton of inflammatory foods that we all know aren't going to do well for anyone. Don't waste your money if that's your situation, because this is not the first step that you would take to figure stuff out. Do the first steps like changing your food, doing a healing diet, managing your stress, and all those kinds of things before you go spend money on one of these tests. So, while allergies and celiac are permanent, these intolerances and sensitivities that we're trying to test for can be temporary if you do the work to find the underlying cause of those intolerances and then heal up your gut. So, again, do these tests mean that I'm allergic to these foods? No. You may be intolerant or sensitive to them, but you're not allergic, which means at some point, if you do the gut healing and the work to heal up everything, you'll probably be able to eat them again at some point. Does this mean you need to avoid them forever? No. So a while ago, I saw an Instagram story of someone that I used to follow that she said her doctor told her that she got one of these tests done And there were a bunch of foods that she ate all the time that showed up. And she was like, oh my God, my doctor said, you know, I have to avoid these foods for a year. And like nothing wrong on her because she's just following her doctor's advice. But that is so wrong because again, she wasn't taking an allergy test. She took a food intolerance test. The best way to test for a specific food, even if it does come up on a food intolerance test, is to eliminate that food for about 30 to 60 days and then reintroduce it to see if it provokes a reaction when you introduce it. So if a food shows up on your test that you eat all the time, it may not be that you're actually sensitive to that food, but you just have some leaky gut going on, which again means you just need to do some healing before you can eat it again without negative consequences. And you don't need to eliminate it forever or for a year or anything like that. So how do we get rid of food sensitivities or food intolerances? You need to heal your leaky gut. So listen to episode 11 because we talked about that. And it could take between 3 to 6 months or even years depending on how severe it is. And if you have other conditions that go along with it like IBD or celiac or autoimmune disease. So how do you do this? Avoid inflammatory foods. Cut down all forms of stress in your life where possible or manage stress where you can't cut it out. Don't use toxic personal care or house cleaning products. Get more sleep. Fuel your gut cells with healing compounds like glutamine from broth and collagen and gelatin. Eat healing foods. Oh, and make sure you chew your food when you're eating because as we said in the last podcast, if you don't chew your food, you're making it harder on your body and it's much more likely that those not broken down food compounds will get through your leaky gut into your bloodstream and then create a cascade of inflammation, which doesn't start any good things in your body. So after you've done a good amount of healing and you test those foods out with an elimination diet, then you will most likely be able to eat the foods you were sensitive to again, although I would highly recommend you do this in moderation. So for example, I used to be super lactose intolerant when I first got diagnosed with celiac because if you don't know, when celiac breaks down your intestinal villi, that's where all of the digestive enzymes for dairy are. That's where all your lactase enzymes are. So it's really common that people that have celiac disease or non-celiac gluten sensitivity are also really lactose intolerant too. I basically couldn't even look at cheese or ice cream, mostly because I would get really sad that I couldn't eat them anymore, but also because I knew they were what I like to call WMIDs, so weapons of mass intestinal destruction for me. But now it's been amazing because I can actually eat cheese sometimes and not die. So yes, there is hope for the world. You might be able to eat cheese again, which is the best. Okay, now we're going to do a couple of reader questions that I got, or listener questions, I guess it would be, on food sensitivities and intolerances and stuff. Okay, first one. During my Whole30 reintroduction, I had sensitivities come up to corn and rice and dairy, so I'm going to break those up further to see if I get the same results with each individual food. What do I do after that? Is there a point when I can add those foods back in at some point and they won't bother me? I'm having trouble finding answers about that in the books. So when you're doing a Whole30 autoimmune protocol or any other kind of elimination diet with reintroduction, you may find that you do have some kind of reaction when consuming a certain kind of food. I would highly recommend that you do test these foods individually, like this girl was saying. And so I'd highly recommend that you try that one food 3 times in one day. So a small serving with breakfast, a like medium-sized serving with your second meal, probably lunch, and then what you would consider a regular-sized portion with your third meal or dinner. So that way, you can determine not only if you're sensitive to that food, but your threshold or your tolerance level for that food, basically the amount you can tolerate without experiencing symptoms. So if you do that and you do find that you have a sensitivity or some kind of negative symptoms associated with one of these foods, I would cut that food out for a while, make sure you do some gut healing, the stuff that we talked about earlier, work on your chronic stress, cut out other inflammatory foods, include healing foods, and then you can retest it in a couple of months. And then you'll see if you can eat it again, fingers crossed. Okay, next question. What are your best tips when it comes to kiddos? For example, lunch and snack ideas and ideas for when you're headed to a party or event you know isn't allergy friendly. Intolerances are causing my kid constipation, eczema, and heartburn. What might be best if it's different for kiddos on a reintroduction schedule or timeline? Like, what foods do you do first and how long? So for this person, I would definitely recommend doing an elimination diet, though it will definitely be harder with kids. It doesn't have to be super restrictive. First, I would recommend cutting out the things you know they react to or suspect they react to. And same thing for adults. You want to keep a food and symptom journal. Once they're feeling good again, try and retest the foods one at a time and see how it goes. And for if you're going to events or kids' parties where you know it's not going to be allergy friendly, I'd recommend either eating in advance. Most of the time, that's what I do. Or what you can do is get your kid a special treat that they know they can eat without experiencing any negative symptoms. Like you can get a gluten-free cupcake or something like that for them and bring that to the party. It does help to explain to them that they know that they don't feel good if they eat the other stuff that the kids are eating, but they can still feel good and enjoy a treat at the same time as everyone else. In general, you want to do an elimination diet for about 30 days before you challenge certain foods. I don't have a lot of experience working with kids, but Jennifer Robbins from Predominantly Paleo has a lot of resources on allergen-friendly kid recipes. She even has a Paleo Kids cookbook, and I know she has a lot of info on navigating allergies and dietary restrictions with kids too, so I would definitely check her out. And that's Jennifer at Predominantly Paleo. So someone asked, can you develop new allergies or intolerances as you age? Are bananas, coconuts, and avocados in a similar group of foods? They all make me so sick. Are there other foods in this group, i.e. the nightshade family? So yes, you can definitely develop new allergies or intolerances as you age. It's really common for people to develop lactose intolerance as they get older. And if you develop leaky gut at any point in your life, that can mean a host of a lot of new food intolerances. Now, on the bananas, coconuts, and avocados thing, they're not in the nightshade family, but they may be cross-reactants with natural latex, and there are a couple other foods in this category too, like kiwi, chestnuts, apples, and tomatoes. So if you're sensitive or allergic to latex, these foods might be a problem for you. So I'd recommend looking up the American Latex Allergy Association and those foods for more info. I also work with a couple of clients who get vertigo and really bad migraines from bananas, coconuts, and avocados, so you're not alone. How often should you retest foods? So there's a lot of individual variance here, depending on how sensitive you are to the food you want to retest, like how severe the reaction is when you eat it, how much you're doing to heal up your gut in between tests, and stuff like that. So if you're doing a gut healing protocol and an elimination diet, you could probably retest after your first elimination diet, and if it doesn't go well, to continue to keep that food out for another couple of months and then retest while you're doing gut healing stuff. Because if that food is causing damage to your body, even if it's really delicious food, you don't want to test it so often that it prevents you from healing because it's causing more inflammation, you know? Okay, last one. What do you do when everything is testing negative, but you know something ain't right? I love the wording of that question. So I think this person means that they've done multiple food intolerance tests and no foods are coming back as sensitive, but they know from their own experience that they are sensitive or intolerant to certain foods. So again, I would go back to the elimination diet, the gold standard of everything we can do. Eliminate the foods you suspect you're sensitive to and keep a food and symptom journal. And then after about 4 or 5 weeks, reintroduce the foods one at a time to see if they provoke a reaction, because that will tell you better than any test that you're sensitive to. So here's the deal. Having a food intolerance or sensitivity does not mean that you are allergic to that food and you have to avoid it forever. Figure out what foods you're sensitive or react to. Do some gut healing with the help of a practitioner, and you'll be able to reintroduce those foods provided they're not true allergies or you don't have celiac. And if you need someone to work with, I am taking new clients right now, so feel free to email me or reach out through my Work With Me page on realfoodwithdana.com. And that's it for today. You guys survived. I hope you learned a lot about food allergies, intolerances, and sensitivities, and I hope that this was really helpful for you. So tell me, guys, what do you think of this episode? Tell me on Instagram. You can try and tell me on Twitter, but I might not see it for a couple days because I'm rarely ever on there. On Facebook, you can be in my Facebook group. Email me. If you love the podcast, please consider sharing it with a friend. Leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes because you guys are the best. And subscribe to make sure you don't ever miss a juicy episode because, again, these episodes are all fueled based on what you guys want to hear. So if there's a topic that you want to hear, let me know because I will definitely talk about it. So, as always, come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dina on Instagram or Facebook. Email me and let me know what you think of the episode. And don't forget that I do have that discount code with Balanced Health if you guys are interested for $20 off. So look in the show notes for that. So have a fantastic day, and I will talk to you guys soon.